On this episode of Still Loading, the fastest Mario you know. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, we are continuing our journey through the speedrunning adventures of Mario here on Mario Month. This is the second episode of Mario Month, and you know, last week we talked about Super Mario Odyssey speedrun, and this one, we're going to go back to the original Super Mario Brothers. We're going to go from the newest to the oldest. Well, almost the oldest. Do you count Donkey Kong or Mario Bros? I don't know, but we're going to go with Super Mario Bros, the actual first the most famous early platformer of the Mario games. And with me, I have a speedrunner of that game, GT Ace, or Ace for short. I'll just call you Ace because I feel like the other way it's going to be I'm going to get tongue tied with it. So Ace, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. So I first found you because I was trying to find other speedrunners to come on the podcast, and I was looking through the leaderboards of some of the Mario games, and I saw that you have a number of you're pretty highly ranked in a lot of the categories in Super Mario Bros. At least from your profile right here, you're first in the Warpless All-Stars category, which, for those who don't know, in general, speedruns are broken down to a lot of different categories depending on different parameters that players have to adhere to make the run. And All-Stars is the Super Nintendo version of Super Mario Bros. So you did your first place in that, your second in Warpless on the original version on the NES, and your third in the Minus World ending and fourth in the end. Like, you're all over the place. So I thought you'd be a perfect pick for this. And to start off, I wanted to ask you, how did you get into speedrunning in the first place, so my listeners can get to know you a little better?
So it was August of 2017. Okay. I was just watching YouTube randomly at night. And for some reason, I was searching Mega Man 2. I think I was trying to listen to the soundtrack or something. I just watched a video
good
on
choice.
Its music. Yeah, it's really good.
It's a good soundtrack.
This video came up called Mega Man 2 World Record Progression by this guy named Summoning Salt.
I know the channel.
Yeah, so I never knew about world records or anything or beating games fast, but something enticed me to click that video. I watched it. It was awesome. And then the next recommended thing was World Record Progression of Super Mario Brothers. And I was like, wait, that the first game I ever played, the first game I ever beat, my childhood, that sounds awesome. And then I watched it. It was amazing. The next day I made a Twitch account, followed everyone that was in the video. And here I am 5 years later, almost.
And you've risen through the ranks to be one of the top tier players in the game.
Yep. It's crazy.
So the other question I have, I mentioned to you off mic, you're a couple years younger than me, a good couple years younger than me. So I'm always curious how someone who may not have that same, a lot of people have nostalgia for the games that came out when they were growing up through adolescence and whatnot. Since Mario Bros. Wasn't out during that time for you, what attracted you to the series and how did you first get into it?
Okay, so my mom, I believe, bought an original Nintendo console when she was in college.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then she kept it ever since. So when I was born and was growing up, that's the only console we had. So she had me play, I don't know, when I was 4 or 5, super young. And we just had a small handful of games, but obviously every console came with Super Mario Brothers. So
yep.
That was the first game I probably ever played, but it was definitely the first game I ever beat. I beat it when I was 5 or 6.
You are better than I am. I have still yet to beat that game. I've gotten to the final world numerous times and have yet to beat it.
It's challenging, especially casual. It took me forever. From what I remember,
you did it younger than, much. Obviously, you beat it. I still have not beaten it, but yeah. That's really cool, though. So I actually that leads me to another question, because you mentioned Mega Man 2. So do you, because of that, do you have an affinity for older games, retro style games?
Kind of, yeah. When I started getting more into speedrunning, I started to get a better appreciation for a lot of the older stuff. And yeah, like, I probably know more about the NES now than any other console, which is weird because I only had like 10 NES games growing up.
Dude, there's nothing weird about that. Like, I didn't even have an NES growing up. Like, I've kind of grown to get in. I'm kind of similar in the sense that, like, I have an appreciation for consoles that were either before my time or something that I might not be as familiar with. Like, I played the NES growing up, but I didn't have one. So I totally understand what you mean, where it's something that's like, you know more about it than you probably think you should for based off how much you experienced of it as a kid. So I totally know what you're saying. So why Mario then specifically? Like, it's just because it was the first game you beat and that's what kind of led you to getting into the Mario speedrunning world?
Yeah, I just had nostalgia for it. Like, I mean, it's the first game I remember as a kid, so that always, like, sticks with you. And I mean, growing up, like, eventually I got a Wii, and I mean, I played Galaxy, Mario Kart Wii. I mean, some of my favorite games were there. And yeah, that had virtual consoles, so I had Mario 2 and 3 and World on the virtual console since I didn't have them on the original console at home. And I played those to death. And yeah, I've just had a strong spot for Super Mario Brothers. It's a great, great series.
It really is. And it's funny, for me personally, I came to Mario a lot later than a lot of people. Like, I played it growing up as a kid, but I didn't have a Super Nintendo or an NES, or I had an N64. But know what's strange? I didn't have Mario 64.
Wow.
Until, yeah, I had a bunch of other games, but I did not have Mario 64. And it took me a while. Like, the first Mario game I ever beat was actually Super Mario World. And that wasn't until like 2014 or 2015. Like, I beat it as an adult, not even as a kid, which is just, it's a weird path that I've gone on. But now I like all Mario games. So you run a ton of them. You run a lot more than just Mario games as well. I see you have a run in Mike Tyson's Punch Out. You have a run in Marble Madness as well. Ooh, a Math Blaster. There's a whole bunch of ones here. Duck Hunt, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. But you have a ton in Mario Bros. So what are some of your favorite Mario games to run? And and additionally, what are some of your favorite categories, regardless of game?
So obviously, I've spent the most time in Super Mario Brothers, and then Super Mario Brothers 2 from Japan. We know it as the Lost Levels when they re-released it on the SNES.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just, I guess, the most fun I have, but it's also the one I'm just the best at. It's the one I spent the most time on, and the community I've been the biggest part of. So that's been my main reason for pursuing it as long as I have and as hard as I have. But I mean, it's nice to play a game and like be able to just play it perfectly almost. Like, you don't get that with every speed run. You can usually, there's some wiggle room. There you have to be like frame perfect 30 times in 5 minutes or whatever. And it's just cool to like master a game almost, especially one as iconic as the original.
And it makes sense why Mario would be the one that does that for you, since you like that feeling. It makes sense why even if you take out your nostalgia from it, which is clearly there, but like you with Mario, since it is such a popular game series, it's been optimized to hell and back. So you have usually when a game first starts getting, for those who, I know you know this, Ace, but like for people who are listening, usually games that are like don't have a lot of speedrunners or people who run those games, there's a lot of wiggle room for improvement because there hasn't been this large community effort to break the game as to hell and back and optimize it and route it as efficiently as possible, because there's only, you know, maybe two or three people running it. With Super Mario Bros., there is literally thousands of people who have run this game. In fact, according to speedrun.com, there's over 1,600 players who have submitted runs just to this website for the original Super Mario Bros., and there's been over 7,000 runs submitted. So the fact that you have you're tied for fourth in any percent with Scalpel, and you are, like I said, you're first in a cup in, sorry, second in Warpless, and there's, you know, so many other categories, and you're first in the Minus World Ending, I believe. No, what was it? What did I Warpless All-Stars, that's what it is. It's really awesome that you've been able to progress through that when you literally have worked your way past 1600 other players to make it where you're at. And I'm not saying that just to be super nice or anything. That's really cool to see. Like I'm so jealous. All right. So if you could break down some of the categories in the Super Mario, for the original Super Mario Bros., what are some of the most popular categories? And I'm sure there's a ton out there, so you don't have to list all of them unless there's not as many as I think there is.
Well, obviously the most popular is any percent. It's the most popular by an incredible amount. Like no other category stands close to the popularity of any percent, which is kind of a shame because a lot of the other categories are super cool. Like we have a whole category extensions board and there's like 35 categories on there. And
really?
Some of them, they're not fantastic. I mean, I'm a moderator of the leaderboard, so that's a lot of runs to verify and it can get annoying, but some of the categories on there are just really fun, unique challenges to the original formula of the speedrun. And you won't see those like get a lot of traction sometimes. And it's just holy kind of a cow. Shame because, yeah, it's...
I'm scrolling through it now. There's a pacifist run. Mm-hmm. There's, I don't know, 10 lives, no infinites. I have no idea what that is. What is that? What's 10 lives, no infinites?
Okay, so an infinite, you know, you can do the one-up glitch and get constant one-ups with like a shell. So no infinites is not doing that, so you have to collect, you know, one-ups legitimately and you just get to 10. That's why that's a category separation. There's a 10 lives regular which does that one-up trick.
Now does that mean that you have to have 10 lives by the time you beat the game, or
once your life counter says 10, that's when timing stops?
Oh wow, so it's literally just the fastest to get 10 lives.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's not even about beating the game. It's about just getting lives within the game. I find that insane, like insanely fascinating. There's categories now in speedrun games that aren't even revolving around the player finishing the game. It's just about specific objectives within a level or within something. Like it reminds me of like in Breath of the Wild with like the, what is it, the dog category? I forget exactly what it is. Like you have to get all the dogs or pedal. I forget it.
Yeah, a definition of speedrunning is just beating a game or an objective in a game as fast as possible. So it doesn't have to beat the game as long as you're like completing something within it as fast. I mean, there's plenty of options for that to happen in video games. So a ton of more speedrun potential.
That's really interesting. I never would have thought of, I mean, conceptually I knew about the beating part, but I didn't think about like completing just a specific objective that wasn't tied to the completion of the game. That's really interesting. So what is your favorite category in out of all of these, or maybe a list of favorites if that's too narrow of a field?
All right, my favorite is Warpless because it's beating the whole game in every level as fast as possible, and that's like the category I've had the most success with, I guess. I've had the record in that category 4 times.
Oh wow.
So yeah, I had the first 1857 speed run. And I mean, the world record's only a second faster than that now. So it still stands.
That's good. And you did that 10 months ago, which is a long time in speed running.
Yeah, that's a fairly long time. But yeah, my first record in there was from 2019. It was a 1902 back then. So been pushed like 6 seconds in 3 years.
That's great. And that's nuts to think about that. Like in 3 years, it's only gone down since 6 seconds. But like I mentioned before, Mario has been optimized so much.
Yeah, 6 seconds is
that's huge
forever in Mario 1.
Yeah, that's that's crazy. So what are some of like, let's kind of dive into the game now in earnest, because we've talked a bit about your background in speedrunning and your background with Mario and some of your favorite categories. Let's kind of break this down. So what are some, like what, in terms of routing, I feel like there can't be that many from the original Mario because it's a linear platformer, but what are some of the routing options in Any Percent and Warpless?
So Any Percent, you just take the warp zone in 1-2 to world 4, and then the warp zone in 4-2 to 8-1. And that's just the fastest you can beat the game. So that's your Any Percent. And then Warpless is how you don't take those warp zones, so you play every single level in the game.
Okay, all in a row. So there's absolutely no skipping, no matter what. Oh, yes, that's the only way you could skip. It's not like you can.
Yeah.
Are there any like glitches that you're able to skip levels without the warp zones, or is there nothing that's like that?
Yeah, no, there's like the whole minus world thing, but you're not really beating the game there. Yeah. If you look at an 80% run, you're taking the warp zones that are in the game. There's no way to like glitch your way past some or anything. It's pretty straightforward.
That's what I figured. I mean, I feel like routing is more of a it depends on the game. Obviously, Mario, I always felt would be like super straightforward, but I wanted to ask just because I didn't know. So I wanted to see if there was anything that's just outside of knowledge that I could have obtained from watching a run of it. But now, thing that I can't know from watching a run of it is how. Like, actually, before I ask about different strats and whatnot, could you explain the minus world thing to my listeners?
Okay, so the minus world ending, you probably see, like, on the category extensions, there's a minus world. And that's the North American version, you know, the infinitely looping 7-2 is what that is. So the timing for that stops when you enter the pipe at the end of that level. And that's actually a tied world record, which is perfect from, like, 10 runners now. And luckily, I was the first to get that perfect run. So my name's up there on the top, even
Holy
though it's tied.
Cow. Yeah, I see what you're saying. There's like 1 minute, 35 seconds and 559 milliseconds. And there is, holy shit, I didn't realize how many people had that.
Yeah, but it's because it's, you know, it's 1.5 minutes of a game that's perfect. And yeah, it's just, that's a perfect speed run. So you can't go faster than that.
Has TAS been able to, for those who don't know, TAS is tool assisted speedruns. It's generally someone will pretty much program a game to be beaten in the fastest way possible. There is still some limitations because it is still someone programming the character to move and having, I don't know exactly how TAS is done, how it terms its program, but that's what TAS is, tool assisted speedrun. It's where a computer runs the game for you. So you can, it's interesting to see for, even runners, I would assume, because then it shows the fastest possible way to beat a game. And that gives runners something to like search for and find ways that they can get around some of the things that are supposedly impossible for humans to do.
I can go into a little bit of detail. Sure. People make a task by, so you have like your emulator and then there's like an input thing. And for each frame, you can set the exact inputs that this thing will perform. So, I mean, TASs take forever, especially like super optimized TASs. They take forever, a bunch of re-records to get it perfect. And yeah. TASs will spend forever making those. I've tried making a few myself and they take forever just to do some stupid thing for fun, just to make it look cool. But yeah, they're very hard to make when they're especially super optimized. So TASs should get a lot of credit for what they do.
It seems very grueling and grinding. It kind of reminds me of the video game equivalent of stop motion animation.
Yes, that's right. It's like a player piano. Like you still have to make all the notes, but then the piano will play it back for you.
But you still have to manually do everything and I can't imagine, because like you said, if they'll play through and if they'll have to play through one section perfectly, and if they fuck up the next section, then they essentially have to pause. Like you said, kind of cut everything up and then redo the inputs. It's like adding all the inputs of perfect sections together into one perfectly inputted run.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So to refer back to my original question, has there been any tasks of the minus world one to get better than the 135.559?
So with that category, it just happens to be perfect because I don't know if we talked about frame rules yet. Everyone knows about
not. That's I do not know about frame rules. Go on.
All right, this is a rare occurrence because everyone usually knows about it because they like watch a video and it's the one thing about Mario that is like beaten to death. So
I understand there's like frame perfect tricks. Is that what you're referring to?
No. Okay. So when you finish a level, the game checks for the completion of the level every like a third of a second. It's 0.35. Mm-hmm. So every 21 frames, it'll check for the completion of a level. So you can only beat levels in increments of that time.
Really? Oh,
so
I did not know that. And that's really fascinating. Okay, go on.
I can do the bus analogy now, and you don't know what I'm talking about. This is crazy. Yeah. So Darbyan, he was like the biggest Mario 1 runner like back in the day, mid 2010s. His analogy for it was, you like imagine a bus stop and it runs on a schedule. So even if you like show up early, you still have to wait for the bus to take you to the next level. And those buses come every 0.35 seconds. So you cannot beat a level. Like if you beat a level with 20 frames to spare, you'll still have to wait those 20 frames. But if you beat it one frame faster, you then saved 21 frames.
That's really interesting. So ideally you would want to get there within the two or three frames before the earliest bus arrives.
Some of them you get there with no frames to spare. Some of them you can get there with a few. Like, so when it comes to a TAS, like the Minus World, you tie the TAS in 1-1 because you arrive there on that frame rule. And once you tie the TAS, and then the water section just happens to be perfect. So I don't know if there's like a TAS of Minus World, but if there was, it would be 135.5, whatever, 559.
Ooh, yeah, 559.
It would be that. Now, the TAS can do something called left plus right, where it can press left and right at the same time, and that could probably save time. But on an original, on modified controller, you wouldn't be able to do that. So that's why left plus right is banned in RTA speedruns.
That makes sense. And for those who don't know, RTA means real time. Real time. Mm-hmm. What does the A stand for?
I think it's real time attack.
Real time attack. Okay, that makes sense then. Yeah. So that makes sense. That's super interesting. And I didn't even think about, like, I understood like, you know, frame perfect stuff, but I did not know about how the game itself checks for completion of a level. That is that's so fascinating.
Really changes the speed run.
What I think is really interesting about that, I said this actually in the previous episode with Spike Vegeta, one of my favorite things about speedrunning is that it offers an insight into programming, into the game's programming, that you would not get by any other easy means. Like, we don't have access to like Miyamoto or Sakashi Tezuka to go ask them about a game they made 40 years ago and be like, how did you program? You know what I mean? Like, you don't have that, and you definitely don't have access to the source code. So speedrunners, I find super interesting, and not just for Mario, but like all games where you find out how the game logic, what its logic actually is. It's no longer this arbitrary thing. Like, who would have thought that like when you beat a level, that you actually would have to wait frames? It means nothing to the person because 21 frames is like in the blink of an eye, pretty much, you know? So that is speaking to how optimized this game is. And for those who don't know what I mean by optimization, it's just how efficient everything is. When the community optimizes a game, it's the arguably the best it's either ever going to be, or it's very hard to get any better than that. And like you were saying, the Minus World run is 100% optimized. TAS can't move unless you said with the minus or hitting left and right at the same time, which is banned from RTA. So this is as perfect. It's as perfect as it will ever be. This is 100% optimized. So it's really interesting that like you have to figure it out down to the frame count of completing a level. That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Are there any other interesting things like that involving just some of the other category runs?
Well, I mean, this frame rule system, that's what we call it, the intervals. I mean, they're in every speedrun. Like, every Mario speedrun, you have to worry about those. So, you when you're routing a speedrun from one of the games, you have to take that into account. So, what you'll do, so like in any percent, you need to perform something called the bullet bill glitch in 8-2. And to do that, you have to have a bullet shoot at the end at the perfect time so you can land at it and perform this glitch fast enough to get this frame rule. So in order to get that bullet bill to shoot, you're basically manipulating RNG by like waiting at the title screen and starting the game at a specific frame rule and then matching every frame rule up to there. So when you arrive there, you get the same patterns every time. And that's
wow.
And in Warpless, where that's like 18 minutes, the route is doing that that entire time. So if you like, I don't know, watch my run and you like of Warpless and you go to the Bowser patterns, I know what Bowser's going to do most of the time, or I'll know what bullets will shoot on this thing, so I'll know my pace, or I'll know what, like 5-3 has bullets that shoot randomly, I know what those will be. And 5-4, like the fire bars can be in different positions, I'm getting there where they'll be nice and I can get through them fastest. It's all incorporated into the route. You're like manipulating luck using these frame rules, but you have like 21 frames to do it. So it's not as hard as it sounds, but it's just like matching it for the entire run, making sure you're always on the correct pace.
But that's still nuts to think about. So how do you know when, because like you were saying, you have to basically start the game on a specific frame on the start screen. How do you
calculate? It's a frame rule. Like starting the game has that 0.35 interval too. So you have 21 frames to start the game at a certain time, which is a fairly big window. If you have like a timer counting down next to you, like if you see a speed run, you'll see like -4 seconds and they'll start the game and hit the split at the same time. And it'll count down and they'll start at like -2.7. And then that'll every time start you at the same exact frame because of the frame rule system.
Okay. That's fascinating. So you use the timer to determine when you're hitting the right frame for the frame rule to start the game, correct?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I didn't know that you used your splits to determine when you actually need to start the game to apply that frame rule. That's really That's fascinating. And for those also, once again, I know you already know this, Ace, but like for those who don't know, RNG means random number generator, but that's very specific. It doesn't actually mean a random number generator. It more just means the randomness of the game in kind of like a nebulous idea. So what is some RNG that's involved with Super Mario Bros.? Is there any, or because of that frame rule, does it negate all of it?
The latter. So how the game works is what the enemies do is different every single frame. So you can arrive at Bowser and like 8-4 Bowser and he'll throw this hammer pattern on this frame every single time. And on the next frame, it'll be different. But this is kind of not the same thing because in 8-4, there are no frame rules at the end. So you are arriving to Bowser at a different frame every time and the patterns are always going to be different. So you kind of like route it in a way where it's always a good pattern that you can get through. And then another crazy thing about that is runners now, they like jump through Bowser, they see their hammer pattern and can tell you the time of their speed run right then, just from that hammer pattern.
That's what?
Yeah.
That's fucking insane. Sorry, it just blows my mind that you don't even have to look at your timer. You can see it from the hammer pattern. Holy,
yeah.
God. That's so cool.
You can get the exact to the frame of your run just by seeing that now. And like, if you're looking at your timer, since that's manually done, it's going to be off. So you want to frame count it anyway to get the proper time. But yeah, that's one way to do it. Like, if you look at world records now, you can watch it and they'll say like the exact decimal at the end, like, oh, that was this, and it's correct because they saw the hammer pattern and they recognized that. Anyway, this applies to every pattern. So like, let's say 5-3, you know, the bullet, it's 1-3, but bullets are shooting. If you arrive there on the same frame rule every time, the bullets will do the same thing. But if you like hesitate for one frame, the pattern will be different because it changes every frame. But because of the frame rule and because every level you can pretty much just hold right and run the whole time. Since you'll be arriving on the same frame rule every time, you'll be arriving at the same frame every time. So the luck will always be the same. And so that's how you kind of quote unquote RNG manip. It's a little different, but.
Well, that's interesting. So it's almost like there's not really as much RNG in Mario as people think there is if you're doing a consistent speed run, because it's the way I'm understanding it, and correct me if I'm wrong with this, is that it say if someone like starts a level at the same frame using the frame the board that I'm already
frame rule.
On the frame rule, yes, say they start on the same consistent frame, just assuming that's a constant, right, and they run right and they do the level optimally. Because of that, because the game itself is programmed to a point where it's going to be the same patterns every time, because they're starting on the same frame every single time and they're making the exact same movements and ending on the same frame every single time. So the patterns will always be the same across that level regardless. They would not change.
Yeah, if you're arriving there on the same pace every time, you started the game at the same point. Like, this is all mapped out in speedruns. There's the delay at the start. You have your splits that tell you your pace. But yeah, that's all done, so you know exactly what every enemy will do throughout the entire run.
That's so interesting. So since it's the game is programmed to a point where that whatever frame that is, that's so in that I keep using that same phrase again. Sorry, listeners. I keep saying that's so interesting. But it, the fact that it's programmed to the point where it's like, it's almost like they, it almost seems like instead of programming a, or maybe the AI is so well programmed that they do the same things, that that's really impressive from a developer standpoint, that they were able to program it so tightly that it stays that consistent.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and shout out a YouTuber real quick. There's someone named Bismuth who like will break down the speed run completely. Everything you need to know about it, including what I've been saying, but in like the more technical game programming details that you can understand better. And there's, he has like three videos on any percent now, because he did one back when it was 456, when it was 455, now that's 454, and like explaining everything new that's in the speedrun now. And pretty much anything I said in like greater detail is explained in those videos. So I thought I'd shout that out for like to get a better understanding of what I've been saying.
That's really, but that's fascinating though. Like I just, I had no idea that I'm understanding it, but it's just like, it's honestly kind of blowing my mind that that's how the game is programmed, like, and that's how you speedrunners are able to manipulate it to a point. It kind of reminds me of like what they do with the Pokemon RNG in Pokemon speedruns, where they have to start the game on a specific frame so that way they can ensure that their starter Pokemon has the right stats they need in order to make the rest of the game work.
Yeah, like although that. I think in those, it's literally, there are no like frame rules in this case, so everything there has to be frame perfect, so that's a little harder. Like, Mario 1 makes it easy. Like SMB 3, there's the section where you have to cross hands in World 8, and it, the same thing, if you got there in the same frame every time, you could do it. But in that game, there are no frame rules or anything, so you can't do that. So for that game, it is RNG. You can't really do anything about it. You can kind of manipulate it, but it would have to be a, like a frame perfect thing, or find a window where it's really good. So yeah, this game is just like this weird phenomenon or something where it just happens to work out this way. And it like completely changes the speed run and makes it this optimized, crazy run now.
My next question, kind of moving on from this, is there any difference in the strats between the All-Stars version of Super Mario Brothers and then the original NES / Famicom? And in fact, actually, with Famicom, is there a difference between the Famicom version and the NES version? I guess that's two different questions. So we'll start with All-Stars and NES.
Okay, so yes, there's tons of differences, actually. The big thing, if you're like watching the Any% All-Stars run, they fixed Minus World. So if you look at NES, you have to load the warp zone. So it'll show like welcome to warp zone 432, and then you go in world 4 pipe, and that's to avoid it taking you to the minus world. But in All Stars, you can just go immediately into the world 4 and it'll load world 4. So that's actually a time save. Optimally, All Stars Any% would be faster than NES All Star or NES Any%. But it is a lot harder there too. Like that game has frame rules too. Like they, it's pretty much a port, but they like changed some things. In that game, sprites won't despawn as frequently because it can process more stuff, which makes things harder. Hitboxes were changed. So like in SMB, on NES, you can just jump over plants if the pipe's this certain height. That same height in All-Stars will kill you. You can't jump over it. The hitbox was extended on the plant. If you have a mushroom and you like jump into bricks, you'll actually get caught and it'll stop you.
Oh, okay.
Because you like move up slightly and you bonk into the next one, which is a very annoying change for speedruns. there's a ton of like little small things that are different. And Yeah, that's why they're their own categories. It's like a completely different run almost, even though it's the exact same game.
No, it makes sense why it would be. I mean, it's on a completely different console. Now, like, Nintendo does this thing a lot of times when they re-release games, with the exception of the 3D All-Stars version. They do some changes to them, usually. But one thing I totally forgot to mention when we were talking about the like the NES version of Super Mario Bros., watching those speedruns is panic-inducing for people who play it casually like myself, not because of like, oh, I hope they make it to the end. Like, we know you guys are obviously super skilled and will most likely make it to the end in an insane amount of time. But when you're jumping over piranha plants or dodging the fireballs, that, you know, the fireball like spinny things, the hitboxes on those are a lot smaller than you take it, than you think it is. Like, I swear you guys actually touch the piranha plants, but since you're not hitting the hitboxes, it doesn't, you know, you don't die.
Yeah.
And it looks like every single time, like, how did they not die from this?
So with the piranha plants especially, you take a look at its sprite, its hitbox is like this tiny rectangle at the very bottom stem part. Like, any part where the piranha plant's green, you can touch the sprite and it's fine. So not only is it like,
we've been lied to for years.
I know. Not only can you like just jump over plants, but there's like a 10 frame window or something to just full jump over it. It's not even, you can do it casually. You can just run, jump over it, and it'll probably just work. Anyone can do it.
I feel like it's just that mental block of like, I can't touch this because I'll die. Like, you're so used to, like, anytime you touch it, you'll die. But it's literally like you said, you have more space than you think you do. And most likely you could just get through it. No problem.
Yeah. Almost in any NES game, like, the hitbox does not match the sprite. There's always some variance. And when you like know that and you can route around it, so you know, okay, the hitbox is here, so I don't have to worry about this area. It makes a lot more sense in a speedrun sense, but yeah, casually, yeah, you wouldn't think about that. So you're like, oh, it's, how are they doing that? They must be cheating. You'll see that a lot.
Witchcraft.
You're cheating because you didn't die to touching the plant. That's like the most common you're cheating accusation. And it's like, it's just how hitboxes are. I mean, there's a graph I could probably find that shows where all the hitboxes are, and you can see none of them are good.
I mean, they were still trying to figure out everything back then. Super Mario Bros. Is interesting because it came out like a few years in Japan earlier than it did in the US. So like, it's, for as much as it's like clear it's an early NES game, it's even earlier than like in terms of like Nintendo's like development history, because it came out so like a couple of years. Wait, it might have only come out like a year before in Japan. I'm blanking.
I think it was like SMB1 came out in 85 in Japan too.
Yes, 85 in, yeah, actually I'm totally wrong. It was, yeah, it was 85,
yeah,
in Japan.
I used
like
to think
said.
It came out in 83 in Japan for some reason, and
that's because that's when the Famicom came out.
Yeah, that's when the Famicom, and you assume it's probably like a release at the like, same time kind of deal. Yeah, like it was here, but I think that's just a common misconception, because I think I've heard that a lot. And that's not true.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. It was released apparently September 13th, 1985 in Japan, and then sometime later that year in North America. And then it made its way over to Europe and Australia in 87, almost two full years after. Man, Europe got shafted with Nintendo.
Yeah, I think SMB3 came out a year or two in Japan before the US.
That definitely did, because when we got the American Super Mario Bros. 2, which, I mean, for those who don't know, it's a pretty common fact now, but just in case somebody doesn't know, like, Mario 2 in the US was not the real Mario 2. It was a port with Mario sprites of a game called Doki Doki Panic. Which I actually kind of like that they did. I think that was a smart choice to bring Doki Doki Panic over.
Yeah, I can provide a little bit of extra insight into that game too.
Sure.
They actually changed a lot making that game over here. Like, the music's a little better. None of the Doki Doki characters could run. That was a completely new feature, was holding B to run in SMB2.
I did not know that. Okay.
And the same development team that made all of the original Marios made that game. So you see POW blocks, those were there in Doki Doki, and those are a Mario item. So it's essentially still a Mario game, even when it was Doki Doki, because it's the same development team. It was just made for this other thing. So all the characters and stories different.
I find it interesting too that some characters that were made specifically for that game, like Shy Guys, ended up becoming like a staple of the Mario series because of that game. I find that really interesting. And yeah, the music in that game, I didn't know there was actually a music difference between the Japanese version and the American or the North American version. That's really interesting.
Yeah, if you listen to both of them, like there's some extra music in like the main theme, even like it won't loop immediately. They added like this whole extra part at the end.
And speaking of Japanese versions of things, I have two questions for you kind of in regards to that. One, is there a difference between the American version of Super Mario Brothers or the North American version, excuse me, and the Japanese version?
Okay, so the NES and the Famicom, like just the regular Famicom version? No, not to my knowledge. They're the exact same. However, there's a Famicom disc system version of the game too. That is different. So I'll bring it back to Minus World because I think you were asking about Minus World ending, and
that was actually Minus World. That was going to be my very next question because I see your third place record in Minus World ending is with the Famicom disc system.
Yes, so the Minus World on the Famicom disc system version is completely different. Minus One is now an underwater 1-3, and then you can beat that, and then Minus Two is 7-3, I believe. It's the bridge with the fish, and I believe it's the 7-3 variant. So then you can beat that, and then Minus Three is underground 4-4 with like random bloopers floating around. It's weird because it's bloopers in a ground. Like it's not an underwater level, it's a ground and there's bloopers floating around. It's really weird. But yeah, you can beat that, and technically you're like beating the game because you're beating a world greater than 8. So the game, as far as the game's concerned, you're actually beating the game. You like get the level select afterwards and everything, but it's not like a true any percent run either. So that's why it's its own category, but that's why it's on the main leaderboards.
Now, do you have a Famicom disc system? You had to use it using the actual...
No, so I have always had like an NES console that I've used a device called an EverDrive.
Okay, yeah.
If people know what that is, but now I have an AV Famicom, which is just modded to like have RGB output and use component and all that, so it looks crisp. But obviously that's not an FDS either, so I still have an EverDrive to play FDS on that console. But it works the exact same. It's like the exact same ROM, and it works. It just works.
I want an actual Famicom disc system so bad. I think they're so cool, but they are a little pricey to get your hands on.
Yeah, I bet.
They're a little hard. I actually saw a couple at like conventions and whatnot, and they were like willing to, I think even just for like the Famicom alone, it was like $80 to $90. I'm like, I don't really need it for just that. Like, I don't know why these are so expensive, but who knows? I would love to get my hands on a disc system, even though apparently disc systems are very finicky and they break easily because they use belts and shit like that. So I'm not quite sure if I would really want one because I would want it to use it, but I don't know if it actually would work. So who knows? But okay. So let's talk about some of the different strats that you use besides frame. Is there like any strats on specific levels or that you use throughout the levels to beat the game as quickly as possible?
I mean, generally like any percent, you'll see the exact same strats every time because those are just the strats you need to do. It's just like playing the level as you would quickly, but then also doing this like multiple frame perfect trick too, to save one frame rule, 0.35, and you do that like every level. But yeah, the strats are generally going to be the same. Now they're different depending on your skill level. So if you're getting like just a sub-5, you don't have to do any of these crazy tricks. You just beat the game like you do the same strats normal level playing, but then when you get to the hard stuff, you just omit doing that. You just grab the flagpole as you normally would and keep going. Like, and then you do like fire strats for safety. It all depends on your skill level or what you're going for. But for like the really optimized stuff, you're going to like every run of leaderboard, you're going to see pretty much the exact same thing. Like a bunch of people will enter 8-4 on the same frame rule, and then it comes down to frames of how fast you did 8-4, because 8-4 doesn't have that frame rule. That's based on an actual like frame count, how many frames it took you to beat 8-4 after the entire run before.
Okay, so 8-4 is almost like the deciding factor for most of the runs, it seems like, then, right?
Yeah, like you're getting to 8-4 on the pace you want, and then you have, you like play 8-4 as best you can. And yeah, that can be the difference. Like my any percent one was third place. It's now fourth place because someone got a faster 8-4, but arrived there on the same frame rule or frame that me and Scalpel did.
That's
on our tied run.
Crazy.
So now Nebula is third place now because what was that? Like four frames of faster 8-4. And yeah, so the first and second place, I forget, maybe five frames faster? No, three frames? I don't know.
That's
I'm trying to remember, but yeah, like they arrived at the same time, but
yeah.
8-4 was different speeds because there's no frame rule there. So the frames matter, and that's why there's variance. But like you'll look down and you'll see like a bunch of 455s. All of those arrived there on the same frame and had different 8-4s, and that's why there's so much variance there.
I mean, the top 15 players are all up to the top 16 players are all 455 or lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy now.
That's
because
insane.
That's like, I don't know, 25 frame perfect stuff throughout the run. Yeah, it's, you can't put really a number on it, but yeah, like a few years ago, that was all of those would have been like a world record. Like that's how quickly it gets optimized and moves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the community is just blown up.
What are some frame perfect tricks that you can that players will do throughout their run? Doesn't have to be any specific order or on any specific level, but what are some frame perfect tricks that they perform?
Okay, so again, I'll shout out the Bismuth video because they go into detail about how all of the tricks are performed and how they work. So I'm going to pay like a very simplified explanation, but so there's a flagpole glitch. You can do it on any flagpole. You like clip into the base of the flagpole and you grab it lower than you normally could, which causes the flag to not come down. And that usually saves a frame rule,
mm-hmm.
which is 0.35. So you'll see that in every level with a flagpole in the world record. And to do that, you need to, so there's pixels and then there's subpixels, which are like much smaller than a pixel. And you have to manipulate those in a way where these tricks work. And to do that, you have to do a lot of frame perfect stuff. So the basic ones like 1-1 and 4-1, you'll see a slight hesitation on a staircase. And that's landing on a pixel, letting go of B, so you start walking, and then like repressing it on that frame you land. So you start building up speed, you run for two frames and then jump frame perfectly. And then when you're clipping the flagpole, you hold left for three frames and then left an A to jump frame perfectly. And that's how it works. And so you do that,
wow.
You do that at least twice. And then there's like a slightly harder version in 8-3 where you have to add in a frame perfect jump to set it up earlier for that to even work. In 8-1, you had to do something called a fast excel, which saves a couple frames. And to do that, that's like left on one frame, nothing on another, right the next, right A. Like it's a bunch of frame perfect stuff, and it's hard to explain it in detail without sounding crazy, but yeah, no. you'll see stuff like that everywhere.
That hurt my head trying to think about like all the different things that you guys have to keep track of just to make those frame perfect moves. Am I remembering this one correctly? Isn't there a trick? This one's probably a little bit more visually like noticeable for the layman like myself. Like one of the tricks is like there's a pipe in one of the last levels where you normally have to hit a hidden block, jump on the hidden block, and then jump into the pipe. But if you land on like the perfect subpixel between the pipe and the block underneath it, you can bounce up and over.
Yeah, so at any wall in the game, you can do something called a wall jump. If you position Mario where like, so every wall is like a block. And if mm-hmm. you land perfectly in between where two of them are and you have like a certain subpixel or whatever, Mario will land for one frame. And on that frame, you can jump. And that's a wall jump. And So in 8-4, yeah, you take advantage of one to get up there without using the coin block. Now, there are easier setups. Like, there's a setup where if you walk off that pipe in the first room and push a B in midair, so you have a ton of frames to push B, you'll actually, if you hit the pixel, you'll have 2 frames to jump. So that's a two-frame wall jump setup, and it makes that a lot easier. And like some 458s or sub-5s, you'll see that method be used because it's a lot easier and more consistent. What runners do is they do a frame-perfect jump. They run off the pipe and do a frame-perfect jump when they hit the ground, and then you'll see a turn back. And usually you need like certain sub-pixels to line up, so you're kind of chancing it in a way. But if you like do the inputs correctly, it'll work every time. But yeah, that's like a frame-perfect jump to do it.
I'm just getting disgusted listening.
if you want an easy glitch, in 8-4, if you scroll the screen far enough in the third room where the cheeps are flying and go back into a pipe that would usually take you backwards, you can load the water room. It can only load one warp zone at a time. So if you scroll it fast enough to load the water room, you can go back in the pipe and be in the water. And that's actually faster. You'll see that in room 3, people turning back, going past the pipe, turning back and going into it.
Okay, yeah, I think I've seen that.
So that's a more simple glitch that's used. Like, anyone can do that. And then there's slightly harder version in 4-2. You move Mario closer to the right side of the screen by performing backwards jumps. Mm-hmm. And then if you do enough, you can keep the the Vine warp zone thing loaded and go in this pipe. And it'll completely skip the Vine animation and you'll be in the warp zone. That's actually saves like 4 seconds in any percent over a glitchless run.
Wow.
So that's like the glitch that saves the most time in any percent, actually.
Skipping the Vine animation.
Yeah. Any sub 5 will do this trick because you can't get it's pretty easy to do if you do it the normal way. Like, there are harder ways to do it that are faster, but if you just take your time and, like, do as many backwards jumps as you can get it every time, and usually it'll always be faster than climbing the Vine, because a regular 4-2 doing the glitch versus, like, trying to optimally do the Vine is still a 4-second time save.
Yeah.
So that's the glitch you'll see, like, in almost any run, especially one that's under 5 minutes, because that saves the most time and is the easiest to do. And then everything else is just like your pure optimization bullshit that's super hard that only top level runners will do.
Oh, well, it's obviously stuff that you have to do for your any percent runs.
Yeah, it's real fun. My attempt counter's, 21,000 now, you know? Real fun.
Is it something, do you still get enjoyment when you're that close to optimizing a level or a category like that, or is it something where you kind of treat it almost as work for a little bit of time?
It dies off, like, at least for me. This is different for everyone, but
for you.
Yeah, I had more fun when I didn't have to do everything perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously I still enjoy it or I wouldn't do it. But now it's more like I know what I'm capable of. I can play this perfectly. So you get the enjoyment of knowing you can do that and like be done. You can get the perfect run to you and then just be done because you have done basically perfection for you. And knowing that like keeps you going because, you know, I'm one frame rule away from what the world record does and, you know, a handful of frames in 8-4. Like that's not a lot. And I'm not saying I'll ever get the any percent record, especially probably not now. There's so much competition and I've been kind of burnt out of any percent specifically because it's just such a grind and such a,
you have
it
to
involves
have
a, so much time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like you said, 21,000 attempts. Like that's,
yeah. Like, and that's not even a lot compared to some people. Like I made an estimate earlier when someone asked, but like every Mario 1 category I've ever done, if I added up all my attempt counts for all of the speedruns, it's probably like 75,000. And I'm not talking about even Lost Levels or any other game I've run a lot. It's probably closer to 100,000, but wow. Yeah, it takes some serious time.
Takes some dedication and some time. It's got to be, it's it's one of those things that I feel like if you enjoy it, it almost becomes like a zen. I mean, not all the time. Obviously, there will be anger involved when you're like on a world record pace and then one minor thing fucks it up and you're livid at that point.
I'm one to get angry, yeah, but that's not true for everyone. People brush it off and I mean, that's probably better, but yeah, I've definitely felt the anger in that.
The rage.
The rage, yes.
The rage. That's funny though. I feel like with this game, it's just it at this point it's so optimized. You're just going to spend so much time. The amount of time in it is just be insane to do it. But I really admire the fact that like you and all these other runners have put so much dedication into this. I know it's a lot of effort to put into a video game, but it's kind of cool to see what. Like that effort, I honestly feel like pays off in more ways than just like the bragging rights of being in a top record leaderboard. Like obviously speedrunning now has done stuff with like Games Done Quick and other charity events. It's become a big thing for charity events to help raise money. And that's awesome. But also I feel like in terms of video game history and preservation, like I really like video game history. Listeners of the podcast know I'm really passionate about it. And I feel like speedrunning offers an insight into the developers' minds that you would not get just by analyzing game design. Like you're analyzing the game design down to a technical level, no longer just like a personal or like a opinion, almost like an opinionated, you know, this isn't anyone's opinion of a game's design or like an analysis of another developer's design. It's going down to the technical specs of how a game ticks and determining this is why a game is the way it is. And I find that's really interesting. So it's kind of cool that this happens because I think I'm all saying that because I feel like some people listening might be like, well, why would someone do that like 21,000 times or 75,000 times? Like besides the fact that it's fun, like you find enjoyment out of it. I think it actually offers an important service to video game history. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. I just find it really interesting.
No, I definitely find that interesting too. I'm a nut for history and preservation as well. Like, I find all of that incredibly interesting myself. But yeah, I sometimes wonder if we know more than the devs did about certain
sometimes
stuff.
You do. It's true. There's a lot of, I mean, how often in GDQ do like devs write in and be like, we didn't even know it did that?
Oh, yeah, it does happen frequently with more modern stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's
really interesting. I want to explain more. You said, like, why would someone do 21,000 in attempts and whatever? Just for fun. Well, like, yeah, you find the enjoyment in like improving yourself at what you're doing. It's like any sport. You like, I don't know, you want to be a great baseball player or something. So you do it a bunch and you find enjoyment in that. And there's like the whole community aspect. Like speedrun community is just amazing in almost every way.
Mm-hmm.
So you find the enjoyment of being part of a community. You find the enjoyment of streaming your attempts and talking to people while you're doing them, so you're not going insane. Like, if I was doing attempts just like without streaming, I probably wouldn't be here because it takes a mental toll on you. And to have that distraction of like other people and bringing enjoyment to them, it just keeps you going. And that's why I pursued it as long as I have.
I admire that you have because it's something that I couldn't do. Like I don't have the time, you know, like I was telling you off mic parenting and whatnot. Like I don't have as much time as I used to. But two, even if I did have the time, I don't think I'd have the patience for it. Like it really takes a specific type of personality to be able to do this. Cause it's being able to look at your own run and be like, well, how can I optimize this just a little bit further? Where could I save some frames? Where could I save some seconds and whatnot? And I mean, this game, it's down to frames. Like it's like, I was saying at the beginning, like optimization at the beginning, it's a lot of wiggle room. You can shave off seconds or minutes. This game is so optimized. You're lucky if you shave off frames, which is what the purpose of, which is why these games get broken down to the the you know, and making sure you end the game at a specific number of frames, which is why it was needed to calculate that a game, that the game checks if you've beaten a level every 21 frames. Like, that's, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, especially that every game has its own, like, how mm-hmm. optimized it is and all. It's crazy how much they know about it. So, I mean, Super Mario Brothers isn't alone, but yeah, no, it's a game that everyone knows. Like, Super Mario Brothers, oh yeah, of course. Everyone knows what that is. So to understand how much we know about it, because it's this well-known game and it draws so many people, yeah, it's a special thing, just with how many people know about it.
And with that said, I think we're about ready to wrap up this episode. Ace, is there anything else about the original Super Mario Bros. You would like to talk about? Is there anything that I didn't ask that you think people should know about the speedrun of the game?
I'll have to think about that. Because I think I went into pretty good detail about most of the stuff I thought needed to be said.
Oh, you definitely did. This was fascinating for me. Like, I knew some things, but like we mentioned with the frames and the bus analogy, like, I had no idea.
Yeah. And again, I just find that really surprising because it's like a meme within not just our community, but like speedrunning. Everyone knows that. So, I mean, I found it really cool and interesting to be able to say that to someone that's like, whoa, that's a new concept, because it's a, like, beating a dead horse meme now to the community, where you never get that anymore.
I think there's a perception, and this isn't too about the speedrunning community in particular. I feel like there's a perception to certain communities, though, that, like, once you're so ingrained in it, something that's common knowledge to your community is surprisingly uncommon to everyone else. Like, I like speedruns, but I would not consider myself part of the speedrun community because I'm not active on speedrun.com. I don't join a lot of speedrun discords. I don't speedrun on Twitch at all. And so if you're not active in that community, but you admire it from afar, it's not surprising you don't know about that. And I find the same thing. Like, when I talk about video game history on my show, and I'll talk about specific elements, but like I mentioned the Doki Doki Panic thing. Believe it or not, a lot of people who are into video games don't know that. It is insanely common in the retro gaming community. Like, almost everyone in the retro game community, that's like the, you know, there's like, I feel like there's two video game history facts that everyone always references. You know, Doki Doki Panic is the American Super Mario Bros. 2, and Nintendo created the PlayStation through that failed partnership thing. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people who know video game history even a little bit or are involved in that community, that's a super common thing that it's like an easy little fun fact to drop on people who don't know it, and they're like, whoa, that's crazy. But I'm always hesitant to bring it up on the podcast because they're like, well, everyone knows this. It's actually not the case. A lot of people don't, because you're like, especially when you have a podcast or any content creation that you're broadcasting to people outside of your community, within your community, yeah, it's common knowledge, so it feels weird to bring it up. But it's outside of it, not a lot of people know. And I've run into that a bunch of times with my own show. I'll say something that I think is like common knowledge and it's not. And I'm like, I don't mean it in like a mean way. Like, how do they not know that? I'm just pleasantly surprised. Like, oh, someone got to learn something new because of some random bullshit I did. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It was a pleasant surprise for me. You're so used to just everyone knowing about it. And it's like, oh, I can explain this to New Year's. Wow. I don't get that a lot, because everyone I interact with knows that.
Well, and like, also, like, the way I approach this podcast is I assume my listeners don't, like, when I say something that I know you already know, I'm not saying it to like either like talk down to you or like, you know, be patronizing. I'm saying it because my listeners, like, maybe they don't know it. I don't know who's listening to this. I treat it like someone who may not know what we're talking about is listening to this. So, and I approach it in a way that, like, maybe they'll be interested in this afterwards and hopefully get involved in the speedrun community. Maybe Super Mario Bros. Might be a little bit heavy to start off with, but there's a lot of resources out there to get people into this run.
I actually think Super Mario Bros. Is the perfect starter speedrun.
Really? Okay.
Well, because it's so heavily optimized, but if you're starting out, you're not worrying about all that. And it's actually like a pretty simple run to learn. Like even just for sub five, now sub five is going to take you a while to get, but I mean, that's only like what, 5 seconds slower than the record. And that's not that hard to get in comparison, because that's just how the game is. Like a 458 without doing like any of the incredible frame perfect stuff I've been talking about, you can do. And it's not, it'll take you some time, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not that hard. And that's a 458. And like I have a 455, and that's 3 seconds and a ridiculous difference. All of that is like doing adding frame perfect stuff and optimizing it to death. But yeah, when you're starting out and you're not worried about any of that, it's a perfect starter speedrun. Like it's short. Everyone, you can play it almost anywhere. Anyone can appreciate it. Anyone can learn about it. There's so many resources. Like, yeah, it's my number one recommendation for a starter speedrun.
I never really thought about it that way. I guess you're right, because there is so many resources and it's such an easy run to get into. I was thinking more if you wanted to get to the top of the leaderboards. It's not if your purpose to speedrun it is to be number one, it might not be the thing for you. But if you're just trying to like learn speedrunning, that makes a lot more sense. I would agree with that.
I think if you're like starting speedrunning to be number one, that's not exactly a good thing.
Not the healthiest mental space
like,
to get into.
I went into it because I loved the community and thought it was fun. It just happened that I pursued it enough to where I got to be one of the best and have held hundreds of records on tons of categories in it over the years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't my intention to be the best. I did it because I enjoyed the community and I had fun doing it. And I think that's the important takeaway, is if you want to do speedrunning, get involved in communities, make sure to start off small and don't like practice. Like if you do a run and don't reset it. I struggle with that personally, but if you're doing run, just do one run, make sure not to reset, do something. And then your second run, you can improve off of it right then and there, because your first run's always probably going to be your worst.
No, oh, yeah. Like,
yeah. You never need to worry about being number one. Just do it because it's fun. That's what's important.
Now, where can people go to learn about running this site, running this game? Like where are some of the resources that I've referenced? Where can they go?
Okay. So, speedrun.com page has like resources and guides tabs, and that's full of information. You'll see tutorials from people like Darbian and Cosmic and a bunch of other people, probably all listed there. Mm-hmm. And those are your best bets to start off, because they go into detail of just like the basic stuff. None of the, you know, like bullshit that I have to do or a bunch of people have to do for that matter. But yeah, it's just a great way to get started, learn a bit more. I have mentioned Bismuth a bunch because he explains the speed runs. If you want to learn more about how everything works specifically, that's where you want to go. If you want to like learn about the history, I mentioned Summoning Salt. That's what got me into this in the first place. He has a video. It's about outdated and old now, but I mean, it's still a good history lesson, and I know he'll update that later anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's just so many resources out there, and you can just have at it. Like, learn what you want to learn, see what you want to see at your own pace, and that's how you'll find the most enjoyment out of it.
All right. So to wrap this whole episode up, where can everybody find you online, Ace? Any social media you want to promote? Anything else? Any specific places online that you want people to find you?
Yeah, so primarily I stream on Twitch. My username's GTAce99. I have a YouTube where I upload all of my personal bests under the same name. I have a Twitter under everything's the same name. So my three main socials are just Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. And I post on those pretty frequently.
All right. And then as for me, as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show and it gives me some nice warm fuzzy feelings. And if you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes a few days early at a higher bitrate, as well as access to a patron exclusive Discord. For $5 a month, you'll get all of that plus 2 extra mini bonus episodes every month. So go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod and check that out. But the most important shout out that I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading. Ace, thank you so much for joining me. I learned a lot more about Mario than I was expecting to, so thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is the first podcast I've been invited on, and I've always wanted to be on one, actually. I thought it'd be super cool to just talk about it. So I'm really appreciative of being able to do this.
Dude, thank you for coming on. I love podcasting. I like meeting people, and it's been a pleasure to get to know you through this episode. And with all of that, listeners, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.